Now, civil rights icon and longtime Georgia congressman John Lewis was laid to rest today in Atlanta. During his funeral at Ebenezer Baptist Church, where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a pastor, former President Barack Obama said Lewis was perhaps MLK's finest disciple. Former Presidents George W. Bush and Bill Clinton were among others to speak at the service. Lewis was a key figure in prominent civil rights battles of the 50s and 60s, including the Freedom Rides and the Voting Rights March from Selma to Montgomery. Here's a clip of a 23-year-old Lewis at the Lincoln Memorial during the 1963 March on Washington.
We are tired of being beaten by policemen. We are tired of seeing our people locked up in jail over and over again. And then you holler, be patient. How long can we be patient? We want our freedom, and we want it now.
Lewis died earlier this month of pancreatic cancer at the age of 80. Andra Gillespie is an associate professor of political science and director of the James Weldon Johnson Institute for the Study of Race and Difference at Emory University in Atlanta. Emory is located in Georgia's 5th Congressional District, which John Lewis represented for 17 years. Andra, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, I know Congressman Lewis was a big figure on the Emory University campus. Can you talk a little bit about your and the university's connection to him?
Well, you know, Congressman Lewis was our representative, as the story that I've heard is told. So I don't know if it can be verified. There was a choice about whether or not Emory was going to be in the 4th District or the 5th District. And there might have been some lobbying in order to get us into the 5th District. And Congressman Lewis represented my university ably. He made appearances at Emory numerous times. So that was how I got a chance to shake his hand. One of the last appearances that I remember him being on campus that I was at, there was one at the law school more recently that my colleague Fred Smith moderated, was an event where Emory was releasing the papers that it holds in the Steward Rose Manuscripts and Rare Books Library from the SCLC. And Congressman Lewis, you know, was our keynote speaker to just sort of celebrate that we had these papers that were now going to be open and available for research. So, yeah, he's had a really close relationship. Right now, there's fundraising for a John Lewis chair that I think is going to be at the law school. And so John Lewis's name is definitely going to live on in our university community. We're going to be moderating sort of a program where we're going to watch the new documentary, you know, about him that's recently come out. So he will definitely be missed, but he won't be forgotten.
Now, what goes through your mind when you think of his legacy over more than half a century of activism and political service?
Well, he blends protest and politics in interesting ways. So as Bayard Rustin could see the passage of the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act on the horizon, he pins this really famous essay, From Protest to Politics, where he's urging African-Americans who have been out marching and protesting and fighting for full political recognition and rights to now use those opportunities that have been given them. And so his vision was that, you know, African-Americans would participate in voting fully and that they would start running for office, that they they didn't have to act as though they were outsiders anymore, that they could claim their insider status. And so what we now know is that Rustin is absolutely right. African-Americans should run for office. They should vote. They should participate in formal politics. But we might kind of update what Rustin had to say by adding the words of a colleague, a sort of senior scholar in the discipline, the late Ron Walters, who was a political scientist at Howard and the University of Maryland, that argues for an inside-outside strategy, that you need to continue to use the tactics of protest to keep those who do get elected honest and to hold them accountable. But yet participating as an insider and claiming one seat at the table is also vitally important. And Congressman Lewis lived that out in his life. So moving from SNCC, you know, to the Atlanta City Council, to Congress is certainly evidence of his activist and his insider and sort of politician credibility, but also the fact that he continued to use protests. So whether that was supporting new social movements or the continued struggle for civil rights, or actually using protests, for instance, to, you know, stage a sit-in on the House floor to push for comprehensive gun reform legislation. We see the ways that that was embodied in his life. I think I'd end by also noting the generational bridge So John Lewis being part of those champions for civil rights, those foot soldiers from the 1950s and 60s, sometimes may seem really remote from Black Lives Matter. But I think his last public appearance certainly demonstrated that what people have been out in the streets fighting for this summer in terms of civil rights, in terms of a recognition of full humanity, in terms of an end to police violence and over policing, has direct ties to what he was fighting for with respect to voting rights and an end to Jim Crow in the 1960s.
We're looking at the life and career and legacy of the late Congressman John Lewis. Our guest is Andra Gillespie from Emory University in Atlanta. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have memories of his career, if you were inspired by him at some point in your own life, if you have questions about his work in the civil rights movement and in Congress, you can join in at 800-642-1234. In the days before his death, Lewis wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times that he wanted published on the day of his funeral, which it was. Here's a little excerpt of it. Quoting here, "Though I may not be here with you, I urge you to answer the highest calling of your heart and stand up for what you truly believe. In my life, I have done all I can to demonstrate that the way of peace, the way of love and nonviolence is the more excellent way. Now it is your turn to let freedom ring." Now, you, Andra, talked about his work with other generations. Now, even after he's passed, in a way, he's reaching out to current and even future generations with that message.
Yeah, it was actually really moving. So I was pleasantly surprised to see that he had the foresight and the forethought to do that this morning. So I think this, again, affirms this idea that he saw very clear connections between the protests that he was engaged in his 20s and the protests that we see people in their 20s and 30s and 40s doing today. And I think he was, in many ways, passing the mantle on. And we saw that mantle being passed as he stood with Muriel Bowser, the Gen X mayor of Washington, D.C. And through this op-ed, he is passing it on, if people didn't realize it, to these millennial and Gen Z activists who, you know, have been fighting for racial justice today, and letting them know that the fight is the same fight, that they are continuing the work that he built on, that other people had started before him. And he just wanted to just let them know that there was somebody out there who supported him. And so I hope that that is an inspiration to people. I think he's also, you know, very clearly laying out sort of his strategic commitment to nonviolence and sort of emphasizing why that is important as well.
Now, Lewis was among protesters attacked by law enforcement at the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma during a voting rights march in 1965. He had told NPR that he was hit in the head with a nightstick, thought he was going to die. And now in March of this year, Lewis returned to the bridge in Selma to commemorate the 55th anniversary of what became known as Bloody Sunday. Here's a clip from some of his remarks.
"You look good. You look colorful. Go out there. Speak up. Speak out. Get in the way. Get in good trouble.
Good trouble.
Necessary trouble. And help redeem the soul of America. Thank each and every one of you. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to give in. I'm going to continue to fight. We need your prayers now more than ever before. Let's do it.
A lot of people have referred to the phrases of good trouble and necessary trouble. Can you talk about the role of good trouble in the life of John Lewis?
Well, it's basically about rocking the boat when it's necessary to rock the boat. You know, there are multiple approaches that African Americans have taken historically to deal with their oppression. And, you know, some people, for very, very legitimate reasons, for the sake of survival, chose to try to be quiet. So that they could perhaps avert the gaze of oppression and thus save their lives. And certainly Lewis's family encouraged him to do that because they didn't want for him to be a victim of lynching for all intents and purposes. And so what Lewis decided that he was called to do was he was called to be a disruptor. He was called to make trouble, not for the sake of trouble, not for his own personal gain, not for any selfish cause. But he knew that if he was a disruptor, even if it meant that in the short term he would have to spend a lot of time in jail, that this would actually end up helping to recreate American institutions and systems in a way that was more just.
We're looking back the life of civil rights icon and Georgia Congressman John Lewis, who passed away last week at the age of 80. Andra Gillespie is our guest, Associate Professor of Political Science at Emory University in Atlanta. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us what John Lewis's messages of equality, civil rights, and good trouble means to you today. Do you have a question about him and his career? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue our discussion and hear from a member of Wisconsin's congressional delegation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our look back at the life and legacy of longtime Georgia congressman and civil rights hero John Lewis. He died last week of pancreatic cancer at the age of 80. Andra Gillespie is Associate Professor of Political Science and Director of the James Weldon Johnson Institute for the Study of Race and Difference at Emory University in Atlanta. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel inspired by the works of John Lewis and other civil rights protesters of the 50s and 60s? Do you look to them today? What do you want to know about John Lewis? Do you have thoughts on the politics and how we think of protest back then in the distant past versus how we look at protests happening now in the real present? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We have Congressional Representative Ron Kind with us now, Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District in western and southwestern Wisconsin. Congressman Kind, welcome back to the show.
Rob, thank you so much, and thanks for asking me to participate in this tribute to John Lewis. I'm honored to be here with Andra Gillespie, too. I've been listening in on the conversation.
And we've seen statements from, I think, just about all members of Wisconsin's delegation, Republican and Democrat. Do you want to share some thoughts or memories, Representative Kind?
Yeah, well, first of all, John was a dear friend of mine. I loved him. We served on the Ways and Means Committee, so I had a chance to spend a lot of time with him and hear his stories. And I, as a historian myself, I was always asking him questions about the civil rights movement and his role in it. And you can honestly say that he, more than anyone in recent history, brought our country a little bit closer to our highest ideals of full equality for everyone. And that was his North Star, and that's what motivated him. And, you know, all the beatings that he suffered from the Freedom Rides to the sit-ins to Bloody Sunday in Selma, he could have been a very bitter and angry individual, but he always felt that the open hand is better than a clenched fist. And he would constantly remind us that when you see something that's not right, not fair, not just, you had to stand up. You had to speak up, speak out, and find a way to get in the way, get into trouble, good trouble, he called it, necessary trouble, but always peaceful. And that was his life mission.
On a policy side of things, some of the speakers today at his memorial service, including former President Obama, called on Congress to pass the Voting Rights Act that has John Lewis's name attached to it now, restoring some of the voting rights that were taken away in a U.S. Supreme Court ruling. Is that something you are looking to do now?
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to do that. It was a bad court decision. Congress can fix it. We've had legislation that passed the House of Representatives on a number of times, but I couldn't think of anything more appropriate than renaming that bill after John Lewis and try to put some pressure on the Senate to do the right thing and restore full voting rights. And this is really about making sure all the states are complying with law and not putting up unnecessary hurdles for anyone to participate, let alone minorities, in our voting process. So it's long overdue to fix that, and we need to be able to accomplish this. I couldn't think of a better tribute to John, given the legacy that he's leaving all of us right now.
Congressman Kind, thanks for taking a couple minutes to share your memories.
Well, thank you, Rob. We miss him, and boy, but what a legacy he leaves and a challenge for all of us. And just finally, the one thing that inspired him most was the young people that he sees out there today demonstrating and getting into that so-called good trouble. That, to him, was what it was all about. And so there is some hope on the horizon, I feel.
Thanks again for joining us. Now, Andra, I wanted to get your thoughts on how people view protests. I think we have kind of a more positive memory when we look back at protests of the past. But at the time, in polling and in public reaction and opinion pieces and things like that, it was not necessarily that popular. How do we orient ourselves as we evaluate protests of today, remembering that the things we look back on fondly now weren't so popular at the time?
I think that we should all remind ourselves and be really reflective of the fact that people's attitudes change over time. And so I think people like John Lewis and people like Martin Luther King look better in the eyes of history, maybe because with some hindsight, we can see the justice in their cause. But we have to remember that in the moment, they were actually really controversial figures. And so if you go back and you look at public opinion data, particularly about Martin Luther King, right, he wasn't universally loved. And I think it's also important that when we do kind of view him through rose-colored lenses today in the 21st century, a lot of people project a lot of things onto Martin Luther King and even to John Lewis that could be oversimplified and can actually not force them to actually deal with the more complicated parts of their message, the parts that might actually sort of, you know, chip away at somebody's privilege and actually call people to question, you know, advantages that they have that maybe have been unfairly acquired. And so if we're going to deal with and lionize the leaders from the civil rights movement, then we have to listen to everything they say, even the hard truths that they point to with us. I mean, I think it's also really important to kind of point out is that today, nonviolent resistance looks very attractive in part because of perceptions of other types of protest movements. So whether we're talking about Black Power in the 1960s or whether we're talking about more confrontational tactics today, because it actually looks more tame. And so people are more comfortable with what they view as tame. It's also really important to remember that Martin Luther King was a radical. The idea of even doing nonviolent protest was something that was perceived as risky and controversial. And so anytime somebody is seeking to upset the status quo and to challenge those who may unfairly and comfortably hold positions of power, they're going to be viewed as threats. So the idea that people like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X were both simultaneously being surveilled by the FBI, that Martin Luther King was being dismissed as a communist. These are all things that would suggest that what they were doing was dangerous, as obviously evidenced by the fact that he wasn't allowed to survive the movement, and that there was a lot of opposition to what's going on. So, the same way that like people want to say that they were at Woodstock, a lot of people want to claim that they were at the March on Washington. And I think some people need to be honest. And I think we're going to also need to be honest about this particular year as well, about sort of claiming a certain type of sort of progressive sort of policy stance in action when it wasn't actually true in the first place. And I think we need to give space for people to say, even if I disagreed with certain things that perhaps I learned to evolve over issues or I was educated, we don't necessarily sort of all have to claim having been there, especially if it's not true.
We're talking about the late Congressman and activist John Lewis. Andra Gillespie is with us from Emory University. We also heard from Wisconsin Congressman Ron Kind a few moments ago. Andra, would you give us some recommendations on how to go back and learn about the messier, less sanitized version of the civil rights movement than we get, you know, from just, I don't know, knowing two or three lines from the I Have a Dream speech? How can we give us a little lesson plan to go back and learn a little more?
Well, I mean, part of it is just doing more reading. So one, it might be to actually read the whole speech and to read that in the context of other writings. So in particular, there is that dream, King of 1963, but then there's also the King of Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community. So getting a sense of King's evolution and his intellectual development over time up to his death would be helpful. You may want to read Congressman Lewis's autobiography, Walking with the Wind, or actually look at his graphic comic book series. That might be a fun way, and especially it might be accessible for younger readers. I think for those who have access to college education, so whether that's at a community college or whether students are enrolled in colleges and universities, this moment is actually really, really appropriate in order to understand what's going on, to take advantage of the classes that are being offered in African-American studies departments and programs, and classes on African-American history and politics and on the sociology of race relations. These are all really important things to help us understand what's going on, to understand politics, to understand public policy through the lens of race. And I think that actually equips us to be armed with the knowledge to understand why people are putting forward certain types of policies, what's worked in the past, what hasn't worked in the past. And then also, you know, in an election year, how to arm oneself with the tools and the information to be able to understand what's going on when candidates are making both positive and negative appeals to race, and deciding whether or not you actually want to receive that, and actually sort of factor that into your decision-making calculus. But the only way that you won't be unduly sort of influenced by that is to be armed with knowledge ahead of time, so that once you receive that information, you can determine sort of, you know, what aligns with your values and what doesn't align with your values.
Just 30 seconds or so left. Andra, you know, with a towering figure like John Lewis, it can seem intimidating maybe to a next generation of leaders. Do you see that generation emerging now, though?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. So with the Black Lives Matter protests, I mean, a new generation has, you know, assumed a mantle of activism. And I think it's also important to realize that, and President Obama talked about this today in the eulogy, John Lewis was in his early 20s. He was a regular person, a farm boy. And he, you know, changed history. And so if he can do it coming from a farm in Troy, Alabama, in his early 20s, then surely anybody can do it as well.
Andra, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Andra Gillespie is an associate professor of political science and director of the James Weldon Johnson Institute for the Study of Race and Difference at Emory University in Atlanta. We talked with her about the life and legacy of civil rights icon and longtime Congressman John Lewis. We also heard from Wisconsin Congressman Ron Kind.